Here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect, we couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everyone, to the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to have you with us this week. Green Bay plays the Lions, not this week, as it's a bye week, but next week on Monday night, and that'll be in Green Bay. The Bears take on the New Orleans Saints this week in New Orleans. Green Bay got beat by the Saints last week at Lambeau Field. Brett Hundley, the second-string quarterback who is now starting with Aaron Rodgers' collarbone injury, that's going to be several weeks before that heals. And so if at all this season we'll see Rodgers, we'll have to see how Hundley does down the stretch here. He kind of struggled in the last game against the Saints. Not that accurate, threw for under 100 yards, 87 yards actually, on 25 attempts. He did have 44 yards on the ground with three carries and a touchdown. So he did well there, but he did look like an inexperienced backup. Now he faces Detroit on Monday Night Football after a couple weeks of work with the bye week here. And let's hear from Brett Hundley of the Packers.
I felt like I was accurate enough. You know, there's some throws I want back. Like the one to Marty, you know, I just gauged it a little wrong. I went a little too far, but other than that, you know, there's some balls. I didn't feel bad with my accuracy today. I think it's just making plays.
How difficult is it to get on the same page with these receivers in 1 week, and how much for the bye week?
You know, it is difficult. You know, just not throwing to them for since preseason, but at the same time, they're big-time receivers, and we have timing. We have, you know, I've been here for 3 years, so we have timing. But today, you know, we didn't make the most of it.
With a bye week coming up, what can you do with the time off on your own, or maybe even talking with the receivers or anything?
Yeah, you know, obviously with the bye, you always get to sort of get away from football for a second. But the mindset is still, you know, we got to come back and we got to win games because we face Detroit at home. A Monday night game. So the mindset is winning. You know, obviously the bye week we'll be able to get away for a little bit and just sort of get our minds away, come back to it. But we got to win. And that's all I got to say is we just have to win.
All right. And the Packers defense really let them down after two first quarter interceptions. They were unable to stop the Saints from scoring in the second half. They scored on all four possessions. They didn't punt at all. There are a lot of injuries involved with the Packers, but I will tell you, all teams have this, and every year we hear that same excuse. The defense has been letting the Packers down for a lot of years now. Let's hear from Dom Capers, defensive coordinator.
Forced them to punt, and then we made a play in the two-minute drill. So in talking with the team at halftime, you know, we felt like what we had to do was come back out and get off to a good start in the third quarter. You know, unfortunately, you know, they were able to take the ball seven plays and score there. Again, our problem, I think, was conversion downs, you know, getting off the field. We had them in a third and nine, and they made a big first down. You know, they came back out the second series and hit us on the big play on the very first play, you know, 47-yarder. We were able to get them stopped. We made a couple red zone stops, forced field goals, and then the last drive, they hit a run for 23 yards on us where we really didn't get our gaps fit right. And then we had the horse collar, so put them down there. Third and two, they converted third and two, and then they had the three goal line plays. So we were too inconsistent in the second half in our play, and we've got to take a good look at that. Fortunately, we've got a couple days here to where we'll do a lot of self-evaluation. And our self-scout stuff, and hopefully we've got a little time here to get a few guys healthy and come back and go to work for the Detroit Lions you know, when the players get back in.
And so there's Dom Capers. But the fact is that the defense was crashing and burning and not doing its job. And it's the same story all the time. All right, we've got a lot coming up on the show. Steve Leventhal went to Hallis Hall and got some audio from the Bears during the midweek press conference. Dowell Loggins, their offensive coordinator, you'll hear from him and John Fox when we return. You know, the Bears only scored 3 points on offense because two of their touchdowns were a fumble return and a interception return from Eddie Jackson, NFC Defensive Player of the Week for the Bears. He scored 2 touchdowns, was the game of his life, both of them over 75 yards. But their offensive coordinator, Dowell Loggins, 3 points. Kenny Loggins could coach the offense and do better. Okay, so you will hear from also Dion Miller from ABC TV in Chicago coming up on the program. But Steve Leventhal next. We'll talk some Bears on the Sports Report. Hang on.
Are you behind on your taxes? The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote at 800-718-1731. 800-718-1731.
The rewarding part is that we don't have to try and reach the broadest possible audience so that we can charge higher rates for advertising. We're not interested in who's hot and who's not. We're only interested in providing creative, intelligent, and even occasionally entertaining programs of quality.
Hi, Packer Dave. This is Wayne Larrabee, the voice of the Packers. I know you know a lot about the Packers, but let me hang on to the job for a few more years before you take over, okay?
Okay, Wayne Larrabee. I figure Wayne Larrabee's got me by about 8 years. So he's going to do that job until he's probably 70, 72. So when I'm 64, maybe I'll be the play-by-play guy for the Packers. When I'm 64. All right, let's bring in from Chicago and SRN Broadcasting there. He goes to Hallis Hall each week and accumulates audio from the Bears midweek press conference. He is Steve Leventhal. Steve, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing good. Talking about trotting out legends, you know, at the baseball game at the World Series on Wednesday night, they trotted out Vin Scully. Now, you talk about a broadcast legend. There's one in the flesh.
Yeah, I heard about that, and then he made a pitch, and then he said he needed a backup pitcher, and so they brought out Fernando Valenzuela, and they drug out Steve Yeager. They had a bunch of these guys out there, didn't they?
Yeah, well, the Dodgers hadn't been to the World Series since 1988, so I guess you're going to pull out all the stops.
Well, the Astros sure did it on Wednesday night, and, of course, the series just keeps going on, so we'll be talking about that next week also, I would imagine. All right, Steve, you went to Hallis Hall and got the audio this week. John Fox, of course, probably not on the hot seat the way you might have thought he'd be at this point in the year. The Bears have managed 2 overtime wins and then the win last week against Carolina, holding Carolina to what was it, 10 points or 3 points? Or
three.
Okay, 3 points and scoring 2 defensive touchdowns, the same guy, Eddie Jackson. And so they're finding ways to win. They're 3-4. They're not that far behind in the division. Minnesota probably is going to win this coming week because they've got the Cleveland Browns. And so what did Fox have to comment on this week?
Well, I mean, Fox was obviously asked about, how their team is doing in terms of, the wins, getting these sort of wins. A lot of the talk was also they made a trade. So they traded for a wide receiver with the Chargers. So some of the questions were about that. And then, of course, he was also asked about Drew Brees, their outstanding quarterback for New Orleans.
All right, here's John Fox.
I played against him when he was still in San Diego, and so I'm well aware what he can do. I think it was a fortunate thing for New Orleans. I happen to know their head coach pretty well because he had been in Miami and actually did not pass the physical there and passed the physical in New Orleans. So I'd say that's a pretty good break for that franchise. And, you know, he's an outstanding player. He's got great accuracy. He's a great leader. You know, I think, a big part of their success there for sure. And it'll be a tough test for us on Sunday. Well, just the way he works, you know, I think, again, like most guys, he raises the play of the guys around him. He holds guys accountable. At the end of the day, they don't want to disappoint him. You know, they've ran through some backs, ran through some receivers. They've been in the same system, throughout that whole time. So it's a little bit similar to, say, what's happened in New England.
Okay, Steve, now let's hear from the offensive coordinator for the Bears, Dowell Loggins. And is he really doing that good a job? They only scored 3 points on offense last week.
Yeah, well, on one hand, you also have to look at it. He's almost coaching with one hand tied behind his back, because I know the Packers have had injuries, but the Bears have had, they've been absolutely decimated, especially on offense. Now, notice, because their defense is coming around, but their offense is still a bit lagging behind. You know, they lost all their receivers. Kevin White, you wonder
if he's ever
going to play.
They always have problems at receiver.
They lost
Alshon
Jeffrey to free agency. So, of course, they went out and got themselves a receiver. So what Dal was talking about was basically the importance of these wins and losses to the development of Mitch Trubisky. That's where a lot of the focus went to.
All right, here's Loggins.
I think the most important thing, the quarterbacks are judged on the win and loss. And you can't substitute that, because if he played three games and we're 0-3, like, we can't substitute. Like, you got to win as you grow, and the organization has to win as you grow. And, like, some things, sometimes it doesn't unfold the way you want to. And the development thing, he's going to develop. Like, he's going to get plenty of snaps and plenty of throws and those things. But there's nothing like winning for a young quarterback. And that's what we're judged on. That's what he's judged on, is that. And it is simple. We're all disappointed. Not disappointed, but, like, we all want to be better. We want to throw 30 times, and he wants to throw. And you guys want to see him throw it that many times. And we believe he can. We believe when that game comes, if it's this week, next week, whatever that is, like, he's going to handle that well. But there's nothing like, and there's nothing that can be matched to winning for a young quarterback.
So, you know, the schedule, Dave, gets a little bit easier as they head down the stretch. And I know you probably didn't think they would have the 3 wins at this stage. But, you know, as we get later into the season, I know they have to play the Packers and the Lions and the Eagles.
Steve, they're playing the Saints this week. The Saints put up 52 points against the Lions and just beat Green Bay at Lambeau Field. How's that easy?
Well, they also give up 28 points a game. They give up about 236 yards of passing and 114 yards of rushing, and they average giving up, 28 points a game. So that's
going... I'm betting on the Saints.
Oh, I think the Saints will probably win, but at least the Bears have a better chance at doing something offensively.
All right, let's hear from Saints quarterback Drew Brees on the Bears defense.
They've done a great job of getting pressure on the quarterback. And just, being in the right place at the right time. And guys, some guys in the secondary are making some great plays. Safety, who had two touchdowns last week, picking up the scoop and score on the fumble. And then nice job by the corner, batting a ball up in the air, and then him running underneath it to make the play down the sideline again. And listen, those are game changers. The week before at Baltimore, the other safety made a similar play off of a deflected ball where, looks like a punt returner, returning that thing about 90 yards for a touchdown. So those are game-changing plays. Not only are you putting points on the board for your own team, but you're, all those offenses were in scoring position at the time, So, those are game changers. Listen, they're playing with high energy. What they do very well. They mix their fronts. They've got some big guys inside that can wreak havoc, if you allow that. And then they've done a great job with that. So, we got to have our work cut. We got our work cut out for us to go out and execute efficiently with what we're doing and find ways to attack these guys.
So as we head down the stretch, I do think it's going to get a little bit easier for the Bears. Once they get past the middle of the season here with the games against the Packers and the Lions and the Eagles, they've also got the 49ers, Cincinnati, and Cleveland And those, hopefully, they could get two out of three of those. So, I mean, look, the prognosis has gone from a 3-13 season to probably, you know, five wins, maybe even six wins.
Who knows now? Who knows? Maybe they can make a run. Who knows? They got three wins under their belt. We didn't think that would happen before. Now we bring in from ABC TV 7 in Chicago, sports anchor Dion Miller. Dion, welcome to the show once again.
Oh, my pleasure to be joining you both.
Okay. You may hear some children in the background. That's because Dion has children in the background. Right, Steve?
Well, not, I do. And it may sound like more than one of them is home right now, but it really is only one.
Okay, very good. Now, I wanted to talk to you about this, Dion. You've got the Cardinals with terrible quarterback problems. Carson Palmer's out, broken arm.
Yeah.
Drew Stanton came in, did nothing last week. They didn't score any points in London, got pummeled by the Rams. You got the Packers with quarterback problems. I mean, I know they're working with Brett Huntley, but a couple games hasn't really been that good. But there's a guy out there that in 2012 beat the Packers, knocked them out of the playoffs 45-31. He threw for 263 yards. He ran for an NFL record 181. Then the following year, he threw for 227 yards and rushed for 98 as they bounced the Packers again from the playoffs at Lambeau Field, no doubt. And he's been a Packer killer, but nobody wants him. And I think you know who the guy is.
Of course.
And it's just the fact that I was sitting watching a game the other week and with my family. One of my family members said, they signed that guy. I'm never watching a game again. So are the and I don't want to, I don't know if I should use the term racist attitudes, but maybe I could. Are these attitudes just knocking Colin Kaepernick out of it? He's too toxic for anybody.
You know, I don't know that it's necessarily that they disagree with him or that it's a racist thing. I think it's the sideshow distraction thing. I think that more than anything, honestly, and I think that it's anyone who would come in that they feel would steal the spotlight from the whole team atmosphere. You want to bring somebody in who's going to enhance your club. And I honestly think he could. He has the talent. He's a good quarterback. I mean, he has ability in the right system to be successful. I don't deny that at all. But I think a lot of teams, their hesitation is the polarizing factor of the things that he has stood for and how he has rubbed people the wrong way or people who've been staunchly supporting him. I mean, he's been more divisive and that is a fear. The distraction part is a fear. I mean, I think all of these guys kneeling and all of these guys wanting to make a statement, we've gotten kind of far from what Kaepernick was truly after. And the fact that he's remained so silent has not helped his cause either. I think if he came out and said, look, I really want to play football. And yes, this is what I believe, but I can put that aside to help a team right now. He's not said that. He's not set himself up for that kind of opportunity. And I think he's getting there, but, you know, because he wants a job. But I think that the major hesitation may not be that people are being racist towards Kaepernick. It's just the fact that they don't want the extra drama around a football team trying to win a game.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of racist folks out there that don't want that loudmouth on their team. They don't look at the kneeling as part of kneeling against social injustice. They think he's just an uppity guy that is disrespecting the flag. And I think a lot of people just have it wrong. And I think there's a lot of people out there that it's a racist thing. That, in my opinion. What about you, Steve?
Well, you know,
Steve.
Well, I can't disagree. You know, at the same time, it's gone, like Dion said, it's gone so far afield from the message he was trying to bring. And right, you bring him in, it's a sideshow. I mean, you certainly couldn't bring him in Green Bay. That would be
the
absolute
antithesis. What about the first 75-yard run that he takes the ball and just goes right up the field with it? Doesn't it all end right there for whatever team gets him? Performance? Would you rather lose games?
No, it wouldn't end. I think that it would. I mean, at the bottom, what have we heard from the Bears all week? I mean, ugly, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is winning. So if he wins, yes, of course. I mean, it's a you know, what can you do for me lately kind of business. And if he's able to be successful, absolutely. But does it end everything that he's, that the drama that goes with him? Absolutely not. I think, and based on what you said, Dave, I mean, that there, maybe you're right there. I tend to think, I like to think more positively about people, and that, God, I hope we move past some of those, the racist mentality. But at the same time, if that's the case, then, you know, the bottom line is winning, yes. And that would help for sure if he's successful. But either way, I don't think that it makes all of it end.
Okay. Well, he can't be all bad because he was born on my birthday.
No.
November 3rd. It's coming up, Steve and Dion, and you can send all your gifts to my Arizona lush condo. I'll give you the address after the show. All right, Dion. Now the Bears.
Thank you.
Okay, you're fresh off covering the Cubs, and you've been doing that all year, but they were bounced by the Dodgers, so now you're on to the Bears beat. And what about the game against the Saints this week? I think it's going to be uphill sledding. Although the Bears' defense is a lot better than the Packers' defense.
The Bears' defense are a lot better than a lot of us thought they would be. I didn't think they'd be 3-4. I mean, think that through. I have no wishes for that team to match their win total of a year ago in the first 7 weeks of the season. I didn't even think that was realistic. I truly thought 1-6, but I also thought Mike Glennon would be the starting quarterback longer than he was. So that to say, hey, they're streaking. They've won 2 in a row. They have not been pretty. I think we can't deny the leadership that rookie quarterback has brought. Mitch Trubisky has really become a leader, a respected leader in a very short amount of time. That says a lot about the kind of guy that he is. I don't think that's a knock on Glennon. I think it's just that his teammates, even the veterans, have seen him take ownership of the mistakes and to openly say, look, our defense is playing lights out. We got to pick them up. And if I do my job to the best of my ability, hopefully everybody else wants to do that too. I mean, that's a leader. That's the kind of guy that you want leading your team. So that's exciting. But this defense is fun to watch, right? I mean, we've been waiting for this, and guys who were benched like Adrian Amos and now having success, and Kyle Fuller playing lights out. And I mean, Akeem Hicks has just been tremendous, and you never know what you're going to get when the guy actually gets the contract he deserves, but wow, he stepped up in a different way. It's just been fun to see what they can do. They're not afraid. They're not intimidated. I think we've seen that a lot. They have an attitude, and you know, when you're facing a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback in Drew Brees, you need that kind of pressure. You need that kind of attack. This is a tough test. And for a team that's 3-4, this is a big game. This is a very big game, because think about it. If they go down there and win and they make it and they're 500 heading into their bye week, I mean, that is overachieving in my mind. And I think they would all feel the same way. Don Fox would be laughing through his press conferences next week. I mean, it would just be such a great way for them to head into this season's midpoint and feel like the rebuild is showing tangible progress. And I think fans could be excited about that too, but the challenge is very real. I mean, the aggressive defense in the Saints, and we all know what Drew Brees can do, and he is who he is for a reason. I mean, he owns that team, and he knows exactly what to do to pick apart a defense. So the challenge is real, but possible.
ABC TV7's Dion Miller from Chicago. I haven't heard any kids in the background the whole time we've done this so far. You didn't slide him a little NyQuil or anything like that, did you, Dion?
I tied them up to a chair. No, I didn't. I promise. No, just I found a quiet space.
Okay, now the defense is good, but how many games can they win with this offense as it stands? They've got good running backs, I will say that.
They have good running backs. They don't have wide receivers. They don't have any targets. I mean, Dontrell Inman, I mean, is he some sort of a savior down the field? We shall see. Depends on how quickly he can get caught up on the playbook, how ready he is to go from playing in California conditions to playing in Chicago in the late fall, how he can build chemistry with Trubisky. I think they'll put in the work to see what he can do, but they need to be able to move the ball down the field. They do have great running backs. You can't deny that. Jordan Howard didn't have a great week last week, but nobody did on offense. That was just a weird, strange, bumpy game for the offense. I mean, just no rhythm. You sat in Trubisky even said, and we talked about it, this week with the Bears of how they sat for 6-7 minutes, didn't even have the ball yet, and it was 14-0 Bears. So that's, it's weird to go out with that kind of a lead and what you're doing. It just kind of changes your whole approach. So they're anxious for another opportunity to get out there and show something. And he needs to have reliable targets down the field, not just guys who can get down the field, but reliable guys. And even that big pass he threw to Tariq Cohen was a bit underthrown. Like, he didn't trust that he would be there. And that's just, he's a rookie. I mean, he's just learning on the job and growing in those moments. But that's what they need the offense to do to keep up with the defense. You don't need them to be going in different directions. And right now, like, the offense is really lagging. But that's just part of the growth. It's part of the rebuild and the process that they're in right now. And as we've said, the bottom line is they're winning games. So how it looks doesn't matter. What it says on their record does. And even if it's ugly, if they stumble in New Orleans, I think they can still show some progress.
Come on, Dave. Remember what Steve Cohen said? All you need is a kicker and a defense.
Yeah, and they never made the playoffs those years either. All right, Dion, well, thanks very much. Always a pleasure to have you as a guest, and we'll see what happens in New Orleans with the Bears and the Saints. Dion Miller, ABC TV7, thanks a lot for coming on.
Anytime, and Dave, you will remain in my thoughts and prayers for two reasons. One, the Packers, of course, and two, your birthday coming up. Like, that's exciting. So I hope it's a great start to an awesome year.
Yeah, you know why it's exciting for Dave? Because he's not going to have to pay for beer.
Hey, I can accept packages of any. I can accept packages of any size because they go right to the office where they have a big storage room for big presents, like you'll send me, Dion. Thank you very much.
Of course. So long as you have a place to store it, I will not hold back.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dion. Take care.
Anytime.
Now let's look at the rest of the NFC North. The Detroit Lions take on the Pittsburgh Steelers this week. And let's hear from Lions coach Jim Caldwell.
I don't make a whole lot of pronouncements about who's doing what and where. All I talk about is where we are as a team. And right now, as a team, we're very inconsistent. We're 3-3, and that's not good enough. We got to keep working and getting better. It's a team game. You know, there's not one area on our football team that you can separate one from the other and say, hey, this one's doing well. You got to learn to win a number of different ways. We need everybody playing well to get that done. So you certainly cannot just put your finger on one particular issue and say, hey, this was it. In this league, you got to win in spite of what you may consider to be a shortcoming. Like I said, this is a team game.
Here's Ben Roethlisberger on Detroit's defense.
They're very opportunistic. A lot of turnovers. Balls are tipped. They catch them. It doesn't seem like a ball that's in the air ever hits the ground. They have a good pass rush with four guys, sometimes adding a fifth. And I think one of the biggest challenges is going to be on third down. They roll the decks of defense. Literally, you might not see the same coverage in the secondary two third downs in a row, two third downs period throughout the whole game. So what a big challenge for us.
Any advice you can give to the defense when you're facing a quality quarterback in that?
Stay back because he can throw the ball a long way.
Ben, as you approach the halfway point, do you think you've learned anything about this team?
I think there's a lot of resilience. Defense is playing really good football. Offense hasn't played up to our potential yet, but we're still winning football games. We're doing just enough to get by right now. And I like to think the last 2 weeks have kind of been good positive steps forward for us on offense, and hopefully we can continue that.
Now the Vikings have the Cleveland Browns. They'll probably go to 6-2. Let's hear from Coach Mike Zimmer on the team's confidence.
I like their attitude. I like the way they go about their business, and it's a long season, and I don't think we've won anything yet, and I think maybe that this team understands from past year's experience that, just because you start out good doesn't mean you're going to end good. And I think they realize that. I think they understand that, we've got 9 more games to play, and we got to play them all out.
The Dallas Cowboys take on the Washington Redskins this week. That's going to be a good one. And let's hear from Dak Prescott, the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, and he's talking about their offensive efficiency.
Just the fact that we're throwing in the red zone and we're doing a good job of it, or just throwing in general and we're doing a good job of it, receivers are going to make plays. It opens up the field for Zeke, for the running game, for those guys to to make plays there and to just keep this offense balanced. It's not just me running. It's a bunch of different aspects. You name those guys that we got out there, receiver down in the red zone, that are hard to cover 15 yards and in, and then we've got the run game when you're adding my run to the read as well. I mean, it's just tough. And as long as we're worried about ourselves and continue to stay focused and worried about those plays, I see us just continuing to get better down there.
Now, I want you to know, Dave, that I know we're going to talk to Mike Prillo about fantasy football later in the show, but of all the picks we made last week, the only one that scored was one that I did, where I ran Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, and Dez Bryant out there.
Ah, okay. That's very exciting, Steve.
I know you're thrilled beyond belief.
Okay. Now, college football, there's a few games of note, and let's talk about some of them, Steve.
Well, of course, the biggest game of them all is going to be Penn State coming to the Horseshoe to play Ohio State. You know, that's a huge matchup, a number two against a number six. So there's so many implications in that game for the Big Ten East title, who gets to go to the Big Ten championship game. It has implications for the college football playoff. It's going to be a huge game. So we're going to hear from both coaches. First off, from Urban Meyer of Ohio State. He's got high praise for Penn State's running back, Saquon Barkley, who's most likely going to win the Heisman. If not, he's certainly going to be in the top four.
Yeah, he's the best all-purpose guy we probably faced in maybe my career. You know, he's obviously a great running back, but they do a good job using him and creating matchup issues. You know, I think back when I had Percy Harvin, we did some of that. You know, he wasn't quite his body couldn't take the pounding that a running back takes. But, yeah, his threat, you can, you know, no disrespect for the great running backs. There's, you have different ways of bottling up great running backs. Now, it's hard, especially this guy's really hard. But the fact that they motion him out and create matchup nightmares, that's what makes this guy. He's one, you know, I'd be careful to say this, but he's as good an all-purpose running back that we've seen. And that's 30 years.
Also, James Franklin, he's talking about the offense that Ohio State presents.
Offensively, they're an up-tempo offense or spread scheme. They do run, you know, zone read, power, stretch plays, do a good job with those things, take shots down the field. JT Barrett has been playing at Ohio State for, I think, this is his 16th year, maybe going on 17. One of the most successful quarterbacks in school history, if not the most. One of the most successful quarterbacks in Big Ten history and nationally. I mean, you got to just completely respect everything that guy's been able to do in his career and everything I know about him and have heard about him. He's a class act. That's going to be a challenge for us because he can beat you with his legs, he can beat you with his arm, he can beat you with his mind. His touchdown interception ratio right now is excellent. Doing some great things, and then obviously the combination of Dobbins and Weber in the backfield. And they just got so much speed and athleticism across the board.
Okay, Steve, some other games. Wisconsin at Illinois. This is a good Big Ten matchup. Wisconsin, number 5 in the country. Their schedule hasn't been that difficult, though. That's what a lot of people are saying. So what's your outlook on this game?
You know who Illinois' coach is, by the way?
Lovie Smith.
Very good. Yeah, they're not having a great season, and they're a 26-point underdog. So Wisconsin's just running back you, going to just run them off the field.
And some other games that'll be of interest. Number 3, Georgia at Florida. Number 14, North Carolina State at number 9, Notre Dame. And number 16, Michigan State at Northwestern. College football coming up this weekend. Coming up in our next segment, our professor of sports, John Poulter. He's going to be talking about the World Series, a little bit on hockey, and more. So stay with us on the show.
The tape measure is probably one of the most important items in your toolbox. I'm Danny Lippert with tips for today's homeowner. Stay tuned and we'll talk about taking care of the tape so that it takes care of you right after this. Windows are a prime spot for energy loss, but you can add a barrier against the winter chill by installing Duck Brand Roll-On Window Kits. Designed with ease in mind, Roll-On Window Kits come with a pre-taped edge for easy application, require no measuring, and fit the window frame for an airtight seal. Also look for Duck Brand's heavy-duty window kits. They're 2 times thicker and more puncture-resistant than standard window kits. Keep warm and save with Duck Brand. Find Duck Brand weatherization products at duckbrand.com. An accurate, smooth operating tape measure is essential to almost any home improvement project. Like any tool, a measuring tape will benefit from a little preventive maintenance to keep it working smoothly and accurately. To prevent binding as the tape slides in and out of the housing, you should occasionally add a little paste wax to the front and back of the tape. If you're concerned about its accuracy, here's a quick test. Place it on a piece of wood, aligning the 1-inch mark with the edge of a board. Make a pencil mark at the 4. Then, place the hook end on the edge and see if the measurement is 3. If it's not, take 2 pair of pliers and bend the hook slightly to adjust it as needed. I'm Danny Lipford with tips for today's homeowner.
You know, sometimes when you compare prices on products, you think to yourself, what difference does it make? The rates are all about the same anyway. But sometimes the rates are very different. Let me give you an example where there's a huge difference in pricing between companies. Vehicle protection plans. Look, if your car is 4 years or older, having a vehicle protection plan is a no-brainer. The trick is not to overpay for it. Here are the facts. The average price of a vehicle protection plan is $2,800, while the price of a TOCO warranty vehicle protection plan for most vehicles is just $1,500. The average down payment on a vehicle protection plan is $299. With TOCO warranty, there's no down payment. The average monthly payment on a vehicle protection plan is more than $160 a month. With TOCO, the average monthly payment is just $49. To get a highly rated vehicle protection plan at a great low rate, call TOCO Warranty at 1-800-987-3157. That's 1-800-987-3157. Terms and conditions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Packer Dave, it's Pat Hughes reporting from the Chicago Cubs. I did work for a long time in Milwaukee, and I recall people many times saying when they grew up they wanted to be just like Vince Lombardi or just like Al McGuire or Bob Uecker or perhaps Brett Favre. Now, Packer Dave, maybe I was not listening real closely, but I don't think I ever heard anyone, and I mean anyone, say, I want to grow up to be just like Packer Dave.
You were talking to the right people, Pat Hughes. Talk to my friends up in the bars in Green Bay. They'll tell you a different story. All right, I'm Packer Dave, along with Steve Leventhal. It is the Sports Report. By the way, the background music you heard there, We Just Disagree by Dave Mason, wrote by Jim Krieger, who grew up 4 houses down the street from me in Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
Of course, the bartenders all love you up there. He's a good tipper.
All right, Steve. Now, it's time to bring on someone who's prepared, articulate, factual, interesting, and entertaining. Something you usually don't get on this show.
Excellent.
He is from Toronto, Ontario, our professor of sports, John Poulter. John, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thanks, guys. How about the two of you?
I'm fine.
Okay. This is so good.
This is both, great radio.
We're both okay. Well, the World Series, I'll tell you, that game on Wednesday night was certainly very interesting. The Dodgers battling back a couple innings. This went to the bottom of the 11th, and Puig was up, and he had the opportunity to tie it up, but he struck out. And the Dodgers lose in Los Angeles on Wednesday night. John, your thoughts on this series so far?
Well, the first two games have been excellent games, and it was actually kind of ironic. They were different games, but they were both very interesting from totally different standpoints. Game one was pitching dominated, specifically by Dodgers starter Clayton Kershaw, one of the most masterful performances you'll see in terms of pitching performances in this day and age. Sort of reminded me back of the 1960s when we had Denny McLain and Bob Gibson and Gaylord Perry and Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale and those kind of guys. Old-fashioned pitching, just dominating the game, and frankly, the way any kind of a baseball game should be, and certainly a postseason game should be, less than 2.5 hours. I think 2 hours and 26 minutes was the official time, and let's face it, that's the way baseball should be. But some of these baseball games that we're seeing now, especially when it's the Yankees and the Red Sox, they're 3.5 and 4 and 4 hour plus ball games. Even an avid baseball fan like myself finds it very hard to get into those kinds of games. So it's very refreshing to see it done with. Wednesday night was just as entertaining a game, but from a totally different standpoint. basically all offense, all home runs. To your point, the Astros came back and tied it with a home run in the eighth, a home run in the ninth, went ahead in the 10th. The Dodgers tied it. The Astros went ahead again in the top of the 11th, and the Dodgers did their very best to tie it in the bottom of the 11th. And for those of us that live in the Eastern time zone, I'm glad it was over because I was starting to fall asleep. It was almost 1 o'clock by the time the game finished here. So from my standpoint, it was great. But what was really interesting from my standpoint was that games 1 and 2 almost were a parallel through the 6th inning. And in both cases, the 6th inning, the Dodgers went from a 1-1 tie to a 3-1 lead after the first two hitters were retired. Then there was a home run. Almost incredible the way that those two games parallel. But I'm looking forward to this series going to Houston. And I thought it would be a long series, and certainly now it's going to be at least 5 games. So one day off before we get set for some more good baseball, this time in the American League Park in Houston.
All right, and the Astros get their first World Series win ever. And John did mention Clayton Kershaw. Of course, he was childhood friends with Matthew Stafford. And every time we watch baseball games now with Clayton Kershaw, and every time we watch football games with Matthew Stafford, we get to see the little pictures from when they were little kids, and it's so interesting. And just to make me vomit more, Steve got a cut on this. Let's hear from Matthew Stafford on his little buddy, Clayton Kershaw.
Definitely watched the game. Tried to stay up as long as I could to watch him. He was throwing it great. I expected, nothing less, especially when I heard it was going to be hot. I knew he was going to like that, kind of bring him back to his roots a little bit, but threw it great. And, yeah, I faced him, just inter-squad type stuff. A couple of times he was always not fun to hit against and wasn't afraid to, brush off the plate either. So he's always been a competitor, and he was, again last night. I'm sure over the long run he got the better of me.
Watching him play in a World Series like that big of a stage, what does it make you think of, the Super Bowl and what it would be like for you if you were ever on that stage?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was really cool to see a guy that, you grew up with, reach that level and play as well as he did. So I was texting with a couple of my buddies I went to high school with and middle school last night, just talking about how much that guy deserves it, man. He puts a ton of work in, and, they've done a great job of building that team around him, and, man, he's playing great.
All right, John, now where do you see the series going from here? The Dodgers look like they're going to be tough.
From here.
I know that, Steve. I'm talking not the physical location. Why is Steve on the show, John? Why?
Hey, I don't know, Dave. It's your show. You call the shots, so I'll throw that one back to you.
He is the ultimate show killer. All right, where do you see it going? I think the Dodgers are going to win this series. It just seems like Houston has to work too hard to get a win.
Well, I think they're two very well-matched teams. For the first time since 1970, we have two teams that won 100 games in the regular season in the World Series. So that tells you that we've got the two best teams there. Certainly in terms of talent, you'd have to think that the Dodgers have it. But from a pitching staff standpoint, I think the Astros are every bit as strong. What has concerned me a little bit about the Astros is the lack of bullpen strength, specifically at the back end with Mr. Giles. He has not looked good in the two or three postseason appearances that I've seen, and he did his very best last night to hand it right back to the Dodgers. And up until last night, I would have said to you that the Dodgers' bullpen model was absolutely superb. But what happened last night was with Rich Hill being removed after 60 pitches and 4 innings, simply because he had been through the lineup twice, it forced the Dodgers to use a lot of their bullpen guys in roles that either were not suited to them or were much earlier in the game than they should be. And I think by the end of the game, we saw that that was an issue, and it will be interesting to see how the Dodgers recover and perhaps go back to their bullpen strength in games 3, 4, and 5. But I see somebody taking 2 games out of the 3 in Houston, so I see it going back to L.A. for game 6 with somebody up 3-2. I don't think we'll see this series end in Houston either way.
Well, also, John, it's so interesting to note that the bullpen for the Dodgers, which had been so unhittable in the playoffs, finally they had a little chink in the armor there.
Well, yeah, it was. And, it's the old story, Steve. You ask a bunch of guys to do their thing perfectly every time, and at some point in time, somebody's going to make a mistake, and that whole bullpen model is built on each guy having a specific role to perform at a specific time and coming in and acting perfectly. And we saw, to your point, we saw last night, or Wednesday night, I should say, we saw several guys a little bit out of their element and not performing at the right time in terms of their schedule. So I think that's going to sort of expose a little bit of a weakness with the Dodgers, and maybe the Astros are going to take advantage of it. The Astros had not hit well in games one and the first half of game two. Then they came alive. So maybe the Astro bats, specifically Altuve and Springer, have come alive again, and that has to help the Astros. So I don't think this series is anything close to being over, quite frankly.
Well, you mentioned Altuve. What a series he's having. This, the little guy at 5'6", 164 pounds, and he's knocking the ball out of the park. That, to me, has been one of the more impressive things, along with Puig, who I noticed at one point in the telecast, his batting average in the postseason was .414. Wow.
Yeah, Puig has sort of changed a little bit, and I think it's all attitude-driven, Steve, in the postseason. I think he's grown up an awful lot in the last two or three months, and I don't know what we attribute that to, whether somebody on the Dodger team or Dodger management has sat down and said, hey, this is the way it is when you're in the big leagues, and this is what we expect from you as a regular outfielder. I don't know, but certainly from an attitude standpoint, he seems to have improved tremendously. And going back to Altuve, you know, quite frankly, in my humble opinion, he's the best position player in the game today. All 5'6" of him. The only weakness I see with him is he has a terrible propensity to swing at the first pitch every time. That's got to be awfully predictable for a pitcher to put something over that's not over the plate, knowing he's going to swing at it and hopefully come out with strike one. So I'd kind of like to see him change that a little bit. But in terms of talent, got to be one of the best guys around right now.
Now let's move on to soccer, guys. Tottenham at Manchester United, big matchup.
Yeah, got to be the biggest game of the week. Manchester United in second place, Spurs in third place, although they are tied in points with 20. Each of them 5 points behind Manchester City. The only reason Manchester United is in second place is that their goal difference is plus 18, and Tottenham's is plus 13. So certainly whatever happens on Saturday, I guess it could be a tie, which obviously wouldn't change the standings any at all. Somebody's going to gain a little bit of ground on Manchester City, but it's a must-win game for both teams. Right at the moment, they're sort of heading in separate directions. Spurs have been on a bit of a winning streak, and Manchester United have not played well in their last two games. They lost last week, and they tied the week before at Liverpool in a very dull and boring and uninteresting game. So it's time for Manchester United to get back at the top of their game and start playing a little bit more offensively. But more importantly, neither team wants to see themselves fall even further behind Manchester City. And Manchester City has a relatively easy game at West Bromwich Albion this weekend. So I'm not going to say that's a mail-in 3 points, but it's got to be a game where City is heavily favored. So whoever loses that Spurs-Manchester United game, assuming that there is a result there as opposed to a tie, is going to potentially fall 8 points behind City. And even at this early stage of the season, that becomes a fairly healthy gap to make up. So clearly a very important game, the game of the weekend as far as I'm concerned, both from a standing standpoint and from a personal standpoint, because as you both know, I'm a lifelong Manchester United fan.
Yeah, City's just on some incredible run. They haven't lost a game yet, and they outscored their opponents by 28 points, which is just unbelievable, especially at this stage of the season. Quickly, right, John?
It is, and they've been getting them in bunches, Steve. They've been getting them in fours and fives and sixes, which, you know, when you look at the plus 28, it means they have been giving up some goals. They haven't been beating everybody by wide margins, but at the end of the day, they're playing very attractive soccer, and boy, I tell you, you know, from a guy that's from the red side of Manchester to say that Manchester City are playing exciting soccer, that really hurts. That's like a Packer fan saying the Bears are playing well, or a Bears fan saying the Packers are playing well. It hurts me to sit here and say that Manchester City are playing good soccer, but unfortunately, I got to say it because they are.
Okay, our professor of sports, John Poulter from Toronto. We will do it again next week. Thanks very much, and have a great remainder of your week and a good weekend, John.
Thank you very much, guys. My pleasure as always, and the same to you, and we will look forward to chatting next week.
Very good. All right, now, Steve Leventhal with Mike Perlow on Fantasy Football.
All right, Mike, welcome once again. Let's just jump right into this. Give me your starting quarterback and then maybe another quarterback option for our listeners.
Really like Carson Wentz this week. He's been playing really well over the last few weeks. Matter of fact, top scoring QB in the league over the past few weeks. He's got the 49ers at home this week, Steve. They give up more offensive plays to anybody. He's going to have his hands on the ball every play. Love this guy.
Okay, give me another quarterback.
Another quarterback, and I'm going back where I've gone before, Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's going to New York to play the Jets. I think if he doesn't get it going this week, I'm really not sure if he's going to get back to the form that brought them to the Super Bowl last year.
All right, let's turn to running back. What do you got there?
I'm loving Mark Ingram lately. As soon as the Saints got rid of Adrian Peterson, sending him out to the desert, Mark Ingram finally got the job that he deserved, full-fledged from the get-go. They got the Bears in town this week. Second option for running back. It started the season in Cincinnati as a bit of a three-headed monster, but the rookie Joe Mixon is beginning to emerge. They've got the Colts coming into the jungle. Love Joe Mixon.
How about one more running back option?
You may find this odd, but I like Jordan Howard. Jordan Howard is going to be getting the ball about 25 times against the Saints this week. And while the Bears will probably be playing from behind, I still like Jordan Howard with the ball in his hands against a suspect D.
All right, let's turn to wide receiver. Give me some recommendations there.
Starting out with Keenan Allen with the Chargers, they're going to be going across the country visiting New England. I expect them to be passing the ball all day, and Keenan Allen will be the primary recipient of some love from Phil Rivers. You stepped up onto this guy last week, Steve, Dez Bryant. He's really upping his game, and Washington gave up a crap load of points last week to Philadelphia. I look for Dez to keep rolling and steamroll over the Redskins.
What about anybody from the Philadelphia game? If you're going with Carson Wentz, what about, you know, Aguilar and one of the other guys?
Actually, I think the best pass catcher for that team is Zach Ertz, their tight end. That's who I'd be looking to pair him up with if I'm looking to pair him up. The receivers, you've got Aguilar, you've got Jeffrey. There's a lot going around there. I like how he's got his eye on Ertz.
Okay, let's jump then lastly to defense. And give me one or two picks of defense this week.
Definitely. Cincinnati, again, we talked about them with Joe Mixon. They've got the Colts coming into town. I really believe that the Bengals are going to play some really, really strong ball. Finally, I'll give you one more, and I'm going back to the Eagles there. The Eagles defense has been clicking on all cylinders, and they've got, again, 49ers coming across the country to the East Coast. 49ers are horrible. Look for lots of turnovers, lots of sacks.
Great. Well, thanks a lot. We'll see how we did next week.
Real good. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, thanks to Mike Perlow there for Fantasy Football. And we want to thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Sports Report. Remember, you can get us at internetfm.com and kwwradio.com. New shows posted Thursday afternoons for your listening pleasure. So, for Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago, for our professor of sports, John Poulter, in Toronto, Ontario, for Dion Miller from ABC TV 7 in Chicago, and for Mike Perlow, I'm Packer Dave saying thanks a lot for listening to the show. Take care. Have a good one. See you next week. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get some bears, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. I ought to club them and eat their bones.
goodbye.
Now you ladies carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.